I know some of you, and from many years perhaps, or you look familiar. So I'm just going to speak a little bit and then introduce Alexis in a way. You know, the way that the Dharma came to the West now 40 years ago, 45 years ago, most of the teachers who were the first generation of teachers, this is Joseph Goldstein, Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, Christopher Titmuss, Christina Feldman, and a few others, they had all practiced in Burma, Thailand, and mostly they had practiced in a Mahasi Sayadaw tradition, which is a very definite form of practice, and it's kind of the format that established retreats, meditation retreats in America. Of course, Zen has their own thing, and Tibetans have their own thing, but for the mindfulness and insight people, and so that has been the primary way of practice, where you maybe use a primary object like the breath at the nostrils or the breath at the belly, and you steady your attention on that and calm the mind down, using that to calm the mind down. And then gradually you open up your awareness to include other sensations in the body, sounds in the room, thoughts in the mind, mental states, and whatever comes up. And the process of that kind of meditation is one of calming down, opening up, establishing a balanced relationship to what you experience. So that's the way it's been for 30 years. And then about 12 years ago now, I'd heard about this other teacher in Burma who was teaching, instead of mindfulness of body as an introduction to mindfulness, he was teaching mindfulness of mind. And this was Sayadaw Tejaniya. So I heard about him because I knew his teacher when I was a monk in Burma. I knew his teacher, but who had since passed away. So when I went to see Sayadaw Tejaniya to learn mindfulness of mind, Alexis was there, and he'd been a monk there for a couple of years. So he was my teacher. What the hell am I doing here? Because, you know, after you do a meditation practice or a technique or a kind of practice for, you know, even one retreat, let alone 30 years, it's kind of like a habit. It's inborn. I mean, it's just what you do automatically. So when I heard the instructions from Utejaniya, oh, I just kept doing what I had been doing for 30 years. You know, I mean, habits of mind, have you noticed that? Habits of mind, they're pretty enduring. And so I had to get some advice from Alexis, like, what am I really doing here? And Sayadaw sent his translator, this woman, Matet, to say, hey, Sayadaw wants to know, what the hell are you doing here? I mean, you're doing the other kind of practice. You're not doing this kind of practice. How come? What's that? So then I realized, not that I didn't know how to be mindful, but I didn't know how to do that particular way. So I got some cues and clues from Alexis, and eventually kind of got on track. And now we've been teaching together for three or four years. Because Alexis, I will tell you, just graduated from a four-year teacher training with Jack and Joseph and others at Spirit Rock. Just last weekend. Mm-hmm. Last weekend. Yay! Now that he's a teacher, you can take over. But I just wanted to mention that there are some differences, you know, between, and what we'll be doing this weekend. Tonight we'll do a little experiment with mindfulness of mind. And then tomorrow, all day Saturday and all day Sunday, we'll be practicing it more, taking questions and helping you get familiar with that kind of practice. But just, I remember I asked you one time at another public setting, something like this, what did you get, or how did you get, or what was it about Utejaniya's teaching that most, you know, kind of worked for you? Because he didn't have 30 years of something else before he started Utejaniya. So if you were just going to say, what's the essence of mindfulness of mind or Utejaniya's teaching?
First, hi, it's good to see you all. And thank you for having me here, Sri. Should we hold my cover?
Chuck.
Yeah. I guess hold it.
You want to hold it?
Teacher without a lot of conditioning, then I, you know, really had a beginner's mind where I didn't, there were not a lot of habits or ruts that were showing up. I could arrive fresh. Whereas when Steve arrived, and I was told he's a senior teacher, you know, well established teacher, and this guy's got very deep habit patterns. Is he really a teacher now? It's just, and it, actually, what looked different was. And this is where Steve was sort of pointing out, when you use the object-oriented or body-oriented way to try to be mindful, you're really depending a little bit on the specific object, so the mind tends to be a little more focused. And if the mind is more focused on the object, oftentimes how we move the body looks a little bit different. It might be more controlled, a little bit slower, so oftentimes in retreats, we explore that, moving a bit slower, more cautiously. And even just from a visual perspective at the center where we studied with Sagar Utejaniya, you could really see that because he teaches in a way that encourages being very natural, then people's use of the body also begins to look pretty natural. And that was just something that, as we see arrived, but to my mind, because I wasn't used to seeing people move, they come very slow and rigid. I thought, this is a different style of practice. So I'd say kind of the main difference, or and this is just an addition, because this is all found in the Satipatthana, the teachings on mindfulness, is this emphasis a bit more on the how to relate to experience, how to observe the body or the breath or the sense or seeing or hearing, and not so much caring too much on the object, whether it is the breath or the body. So normally when we all start practicing, we really try to give a lot of attention to the specific object. Keep returning to the breath, keep returning to the breath, or returning to the stepping and placing of the feet. If we're trying to develop a little bit more an understanding of the quality of awareness, really recognizing the ability to know when am I being aware and when am I not being aware, then we have to begin to be able to see the mind that's working. So for the most part, we only know if we're aware or not if we're knowing the breath. And I like to explore recognizing awareness just the same as recognizing an emotion. So we know when we're happy, we know when we're sad, we know when we're bored or excited, and it doesn't take a lot of work to recognize those emotional states. Awareness, being aware, has its own unique flavor, and we need simply to start to kind of question and say, what is it like to be aware? What is the experience like when I've been lost in thoughts, in some mood or story? And as we compare those moments of becoming aware out of having not been aware, you really can see that or understand that this is the quality of being aware, being mindful. And then from that point, what we're really beginning to do is just check the mind in a very light way. Am I aware? Am I aware? What am I aware of? So that's recognizing the mind activity rather than going straight to the object. And we'll tease that out a lot as we talk further. So just for now, thank you for your warm welcome, and it's fun to be engaging more. Steve has seen me go through a huge transition from being a real nervous wreck in front of groups of three or four to, you know, a little more comfortable getting there, the bigger groups.
You're doing very well.
He's my teacher. He was very modest.
It did take a few years of it. Come on, you could say one word.
Yeah. There was a retreat not so long ago, maybe a year ago. There's three of us, good friends, and it was my turn to give a talk that evening. And Steve was telling the third assistant, the third teacher on the retreat, right about now, Alexis is going to come find me and say, I don't know what I'm going to talk on tonight. I might only speak for 20 minutes. Is that okay? So I was out about looking for Steve. And I went up to him and found him and I said, Steve, I don't know what I'm going to talk about yet tonight. I might only talk about 20 minutes. And he and our friend Dan just burst out laughing. I thought, that's so insensitive. This is vulnerable for me. So I didn't realize I had been creating this pattern, right? Of, you know, how I relate to being in front of groups. So much to understand about ourselves. And just happy to be doing that with you. So I would say let's do some sitting together. How was it? Did you just go unconscious immediately if you didn't follow your specific object, or did you find yourself doing a style of practice that you're very deeply accustomed to being specific?
I felt very open to the inside my mind. It was an opening of my heart as well.
It's very opening for you inside the mind, and it also felt a little bit through to the heart. Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, I found myself wondering whether, because I was focusing on the mind, and then I started focusing on the brain and noticing all the sensations, and then that went to the chakra, and then I began to wonder, was that in the mind or is that in the body? So then I was kind of wondering about that.
Right.
And then I began to realize that I was unaware of everything else that was going on.
Then you realized you were unaware of what?
Of everything else that was going on. So then I began to wonder if I should be in some sort of a witness consciousness, witnessing everything and noticing whether I was aware.
Yes. It's easier for us to pass it. Just hearing that you first were noticing the mind, felt like you were noticing the mind, then starting to think about, am I watching the mind now, or is it here in the brain? And then hearing you say something to the effect of maybe paying attention to the chakra, and is the chakra the mind or the brain? And then also exploring this, I'm no longer being aware of all this other stuff. And a little similar to your comment just about, it's interesting when we're not targeting the attention towards a specific object, we begin to see things that we don't normally take as being part of our meditation, which is, oh, look, the mind first starts trying to find the mind, and then it starts to think about the brain as being, is the brain here, and that means the mind is here also, and is this the chakra, is it mind or brain? And all of that is what is happening for us in that moment. So we are being aware of much more when we, at times, don't target the attention specifically to a particular place. So when Steve was asking me, I was remembering during the sitting, and he asked what was so different for me. And so then more thoughts, obviously, the mind gets kind of clear during the sitting. oftentimes thinks more clearly and sometimes just thinks. But I was noticing then during the sitting, remembering what had shifted for me a lot was I had gotten really good at noticing the body sensations, doing a kind of practice that was sweeping, really good at it. And yet along with that were a lot of moods that I knew were there, but I wasn't really including those as being part of my meditation. One of the things that was beginning to happen was I started to have some kind of negative thinking that was leading to a little bit of depression, even though I really loved the Dharma and was practicing diligently. I was watching all these body sensations, but this very obvious thing that was happening, which was this depressive mood that was beginning to engulf the mind, even though I knew it, I wasn't opening to that as part of my experience that I could observe in a skillful way and understand its nature so that I wasn't suffering from it. And all I needed to be told was, open up, no more. Invite more into the awareness. The awareness is already good enough to start to receive more experiences. And just by the invitation of hearing that from a Dharma teacher, changed my practice on the spot. It was as if I suddenly could receive so much more of what was in my immediate experience, but I needed permission to know that that's my practice, that's allowed.
I think that's a good point, because I also, when I first started practicing in this way, you know, like many of you, I'd always done rising, falling in the abdomen, and whenever strong sensations arose in the body, I would turn my attention to it and focus on that area of discomfort, and when strong emotions arose, I would recognize those mental states. But it was always an energy of going out to get the object. I'm going to get the breath, I'm going to get that painful sense, I'm going to get that mental state. And as Alexis just said, his instruction was to just invite more in, to receive more experience, receive more of your experience. And I think that that's a good to recognize that the mind is knowing everything anyway. What we're doing with this instruction is just saying, it's okay to know what you know. It's okay to recognize what you know. And so to have a receptive mind rather than a kind of a narrow mind that's looking for something, this is a mind that can open. And when you allow everything in, then what comes in isn't so important. What is important is, oh, there's this awareness and allowing and receiving. Then you're noticing the mind and the qualities of mind, maybe more than the objects and the quality of the object. I think that that's one of the main points of this awareness of mind or mindfulness of mind. Chitta nupassana, this is called. Chitta being the mind, nupassana being observing or watching. So chitta nupassana is watching the mind. Of course, the mind is always knowing something. It's knowing thoughts, it's knowing sounds, it's knowing, you know, sensations in the body. You can't shut the mind off. It's always knowing something. So we're not so concerned with what's knowing. We're more interested in, oh, there's knowing happening. Huh, okay. Let me recognize this knowing and how that works. You know, I was it Spirit Walk when I first used emoji? So, you know, another thing that Sayadaw Vajrayana teaches, you know, when you're meditating, you know, sometimes, you know, when you have an object, you know, if you look at my face, you'll see this is how we meditate. Nose like a breathing in, breathing out, and if it's here, it's like, breathing in, breathing out. Or if you've got pain in the knee or something, you know, you're looking at the pain, you're going, you know, and you can see this expression on your face. If you had a mirror and you were looking at your face, you can see this expression that displays how you're meditating, how you're practicing, how you're being aware. It doesn't express, you know, the pain or the breath or whatever. It's like how you're meditating. Mm-hmm. So Sayadaw Tejaniya asks us a lot to check our attitude of mind. Now, most of us, before you come to, before you hear Tejaniya's teachings, you don't know what, check your attitude of mind, what's that? You know, check your attitude of mind? I don't know. You know, but it's not so much, well, it's just, what's the flavor of the mind right now in relation to practicing or trying to be aware? So you can see that when you're kind of looking at the breath like this, you know, if this was an emoji, what would it be saying? So, just at the last retreat that we were teaching together at Spirit Rock, I said, check your emoji. Check your emoji. Because attitude of mind, you go, what do you mean? Attitude of mind. I don't know what you mean, attitude of mind. I said, if your face was an emoji, what would it look like? And then you can see, oh, that's your attitude of mind. So it's a I'm gonna call this emoji practice.
I needed clarification around exactly an emoji versus an emoticon. Apparently they're the same thing. So, and for those that don't know, emoticons, you know, they're those little smiley faces or grumpy faces that we can put with each other. So apparently emoji is a cooler way now of saying it. So what's your emoji in relation to what's happening? It's sort of saying, what's the attitude of the mind? You know, if we think that we are always using our mind to practice, it's objects that allow us to be aware of something. So we're using the breath to be aware. We're using hearing to be aware. We're using seeing to be aware. But it's the mind that is being aware. And this really over time needs to be included, because even if we're trying to support our practice with a particular object, which is a really fine way to practice, even if we're wanting to practice, let's say, with the breath, or with the body, and that's our primary practice, we still will need to know how we're using our mind in relation to this experience. Is it gripping, holding on? Is it judging? You know, is the mind judging when we're not able to do it? Is it judging when we're getting sleepy and getting distracted? So the more we're able to recognize that this is mind activity, how am I practicing? Those kinds of questions can keep the mind really bright and balanced in the midst of the various ways that we are trying to develop mindfulness.
One of the things that I've noticed and that Sayadaw Tejaniya points out is when we have a chosen object, you know, the object that we're going to pay attention to, like the breath at the nostrils or the rising falling of the abdomen, then even though it's just, okay, just gently be with the breath, breathe normal, you know, but the instruction is pay attention to the breath. You know, and inevitably, when you try to watch an object with some continuity, you soon find out you can't do it. the mind doesn't follow. The mind doesn't obey you. You say, okay, I'm going to watch the breath. You're breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, spacing out. and the mind goes off thinking about something. And while it's thinking, you don't know that it's thinking. Right? You're lost in thought. You know, and actually, you're not only lost in thought. You know, I'm going to say something. Don't take it personal now, because it's not really personal. But you're totally ignorant. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you don't know if you're sitting or standing. You don't know if you're male, female, or other. You don't know how old you are. You don't know what day it is. You don't know anything while the mind is thinking and you're not aware of it. You don't know anything. You're not even there. It's as if you're not even there. Ah, now here's the thing. When suddenly you come out of that daydream and you go, oh, here I am. Wow, I was just thinking. Sometimes you can remember everything you thought about, but you didn't know it at the time. Some capacity of mind knew what was going on in every moment, but no awareness. I mean, I know this sounds kind of like, what? How can you know something's going on and not be aware of it? Well, I'm sure you all had that experience a lot. Okay, so what we're cultivating here is, we were acknowledging in every moment something being known. Can we recognize the knowing? That's what we're asking, because that's being aware of the awareness, being aware of the knowing. That's what we're cultivating. And as we have discovered, what we know changes moment to moment. The sound, the sensation, a thought, a breath, a, you know, a memory, a plan, a liking, a disliking, upsetness, and what ifs, and what. It goes on and on. It's really tiring paying attention to all those things. But what's not tiring is just recognizing that knowing's happening. You just can rest back here and say, oh yeah, sounds are being known, and sensations are being known, the breath is being known, the thoughts are being known. You know, and you don't have to get too entangled with what is being known. You can just keep monitoring, oh, the knowing's happening, this awareness, this recognition of knowing. That's what we're pointing to with these kinds of instructions. Any other comments about your experience? Or? Yeah.
I feel that I still need a way to settle and calm my mind at the beginning, particularly after a long day, in order to get that clarity of mind to know the knowing. So, do you have any suggestions about that?
I feel the same way. I mean, when I was starting to guide, I was thinking, oh, no one's going to be able to do this with me, and can I even do this? And yet it's partly just the mind thinking and getting a little bit anxious, and as soon as I'm again remembering, there's actually no right experience to be having, can I simply know what's happening? The mind gets very simple again. And I think partly because we preference calm so much as an experience, that in some ways we're always wanting our practice to do that for us. And if we really shift the emphasis of practice to be more about learning and not about achieving calm, it almost opens up experience to be as it is. If I'm going to be angry and frustrated, but now I'm learning about the nature of the mind, what anger is, what frustration is, it takes for me all the pressure off. I don't have to get this right. As far as an experience, I can simply recognize again what's happening. That really is the power of mindfulness, of awareness. It allows us to know what's happening. And yet, I think oftentimes we're trying to do our practice in a way that is still fueled by wanting, you know, by wanting calm, wanting some different experience, rather than the wisdom that understands, I don't get to choose what experience comes. I will get a lot of different experiences from now until I die that won't be in my choice. Can I be with that in a way that allows me to know what's happening and continue to learn? See how the mind gets caught, what does it mean to have a skillful state of mind? Why is it skillful? Why is this unskillful? Can I feel the suffering in the reactive, agitated states? So when we make that shift towards really being interested to learn, then we can actually, even before we get calm and the mind settles down, even along that whole process, simply by introducing right view, we can actually start to have a new relationship, even to those moments I find of uncertainty. But try, just see how it is for you. And this, again, this is something else that I really valued so much from Sayadaw Tejaniya, was he really encouraged me a lot to use the wisdom function, the intelligence of the mind, to think about practice wisely. Because I was just always using the mind in a more mechanical way. Okay, this is my job. Keep going back to the breath. Keep going to the body. And he said, no, you think about what you're doing. Why are you practicing? What's the benefit of being aware? And what is the nature of an experience? It doesn't belong to you. It's arising out of conditions. So if it doesn't belong to you, what's the right way of relating to experience? If it's not even in our, ultimately, if it's not really in our control, it's things calm will rise when conditions are there, sadness will rise when the conditions are there. When we really see that, then we can start to realize, oh, the right way to practice, the skillful way is, again, to recognize this is what's happening. The mind is not settled. This is what unsettled feels like. Just getting confidence that that's enough. That's enough. That's what this experience tastes like. And it's just trying it out.
I think that's a good comment, but I wanted to ask you, when you said, I need something to help me to calm down after, busy day and stressed out and kind of like, and to just say, notice your mind is like, it's like, hey, I want to chill a little bit. We know that. When we feel kind of stressed and stretched and a little bit tired, a little bit overwrought, we know that. So the question to ask yourself, in if we were just going to do this practice and didn't have an object to calm down, we could just say, is it okay knowing this experience? This experience is happening, and we know it. We want to get rid of it. We want to get away from it. We want to calm down. But we do know what this experience is. So if you just ask yourself, is it okay to know this experience? It always is. It's always okay. If we say, is this experience okay? We might say, no, it's not. I want to get rid of it. I want to be calm. But if you ask, is it okay to know this experience? Is it okay to be aware of this experience? Then it is. I don't like it, but it's okay to be aware of it. So if you look at your experience of, stress or feeling agitated or any of the upsetness that we can feel at different times, emotional dramas of one sort or another, we don't like to be angry, we don't like to be frustrated, we don't like to be depressed. But if we say, is it okay to be aware? Is it okay to know this experience of agitation? Is it okay to be aware of frustration? Then, it's okay. Okay, so then we can adjust our attitude. Our attitude is originally when we think, I don't like this frustration. I want to get rid of this anger. Then our emoji is, pushing away. But if you say, is it okay to know it? It's like, yeah. Okay, then you got this kind of like receptive, open, interested, allowing, acknowledging. Oh, yeah, this sucks, but it's okay to know it. I mean, that's our reaction is still, I don't like this and I do like that. But awareness doesn't discriminate like that. Awareness knows everything equally easily. It can be something that's very painful or something that's very pleasant, something that you really like, something that you really don't like. Awareness doesn't care. It'll know anything. So if you check, is it okay to be aware of this? Then, everything is okay. And what's your experience? It's okay to be aware of it. So if you need a technique to kind of help you get settled, like you say, just after a day's work, you want to get settled, you want to get grounded, you want to get present. Instead of saying, I got to calm down, where's the breath? Come back here. Just say, okay, I'm really wound up. I'm really flying. Is it okay to be aware of this? Yeah, it is, but it's intense. Is it okay to still be aware? Yeah. Is it still okay to be? Yeah. Okay, now what's your experience? Well, it's okay. Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah. Well, it's okay to be aware of this. I'm kind of calming down. The awareness is just can be with it. You're not trying to turn away from it. You're not judging it. You're not trying to do something other than be stressed. Like, watch the breath. Now, here you are. You're stressed. You're kind of wound up. And your mind is 100% occupied with just trying to, kind of unwind from the day. And then you say, okay, mind, don't do that. Pay attention to the breath. Can you feel that there'd be a little dissonance in the mind? The mind is totally wound up here, and you're saying, calm down. And you go, and your mind goes, you're kidding. But if you just say to your mind, is it okay to be this way? Is it okay to be aware of this? Well, obviously it is, because the mind is aware. So that's what Alexis was saying. Sayadaw says, look at your mind. How's your mind doing? What's your mind doing with this? How are you going to meditate with this kind of experience? you know, rather than trying to change it or judge it, you just acknowledge this is, there's awareness of this experience. The experience is really unpleasant, but the awareness is okay.
No, not to harp too much on this, but any door can just go so many, you know, can offer so much Dharma, which is, I love the Dharma. You know, as the, I'd say as the momentum of practice and the skill gets refined, even the intention to not experience the agitation, which has a little bit of that judgment or aversion that this is not a good experience, this is what we want to learn about. Oh, that's aversion. One of the basic roots that the Buddha points to is being the cause of suffering. Mm-hmm. And yet we keep listening to aversion, we don't recognize it, and we keep trying to get onto something better when actually it's presenting itself, the Dharma is revealing itself all the time, how our mind is judging, wanting, preferencing. And yet we're not taking that offering, which is, this is the Dharma. We want to see how the mind is resisting and reacting, and allowing experiences to be as they are, and simply in a very natural way to watch means we get so many chances to see what really is being pointed to as the cause of our discontent, our stress. We usually keep pointing at the experience, and yet it's this relationship that we're having to experience that we want to discover over time.
Actually, I think there might be a better time for me to ask the question.
After?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll do another sitting.
Exploring. So now that we've talked a little bit about how you usually practice and how we practice with awareness, and we did a 20-minute, let's just try it again. 10-12 minutes. And I'll give just a little reminders, and then just check your awareness. Or check your emotion, how are you practicing? just to see what you've learned. How this sitting could be a little bit different than the first one. Okay. So don't even adjust your posture. Don't even get yourself into the right posture. Whatever posture you're in, that's the right posture. Can you be aware of that? Is it okay to be aware of your posture like this? You know, slumped and...
It's better when I crack my back, though.
Yeah, you like better. We all like better. But can you be okay with it? Is it okay to be aware of, oh, the body feels a little thing? And then you can adjust and, oh, yeah, okay. All right. So then you just kind of like, okay. Okay. Awareness is remembering to recognize present moment's experience. Okay. Is there awareness? Is there a recognition of this moment of knowing something? Now shift your attention a little bit from looking for the object. Shift to receiving this present moment's experience. And recognize me, be aware. Is it okay to be aware of what you're feeling? Is it okay to be aware of your experience? If your face was an emoji, what would it look like? Or what would it be saying? Is the mind aware? If your mind has picked up a familiar meditative technique, that you something you usually do, let go of doing that. See if you can do nothing. Let awareness find you, rather than you make awareness happen. Just stop. Wait. Is it okay to be aware of what you're knowing right now?
So?
I'm reminded of a wonderful parenting thing. Go see what the children are doing and tell them to stop. And that's what I do with my mind. Go see what it's doing and tell it to stop.
Ouch. But now I have a bonus question for you. Is it okay to be aware of that? Better be, because you are aware, right? Even though you might not like that you do that, or that you have done that, still, there's an awareness that that's what your mind does. Right?
It seems that awareness can, you can turn it into another object, and then you're kind of, there's kind of awareness, and then there could be awareness of awareness, and then you're kind of giving your feet that awareness.
There's the potential for that, the hall of mirrors. Endless. What am I doing? There's different ways to talk about this, and I'm interested to hear how Steve reflects on this. There's one point when your teacher was saying that trying to be aware of awareness he had used that languaging for a while, and I actually was with him early on before he was clear with the language part of it. I think he was clear with his meaning, but the language wasn't. So I'd often go back to my room after a period of practice, and it was a Korean monk I was very friendly with. And I remember we had all these drawings and boxes, and so clearly on the wrong path. If you ever find yourself drawing boxes about your mind and the observing mind, watching the awareness, that's not the right. You're kind of overdoing it, just so you know. We don't need to go that far into things. And then he shifted it towards just understanding the nature of awareness. So when I, in the beginning remarks, when I was asking you, do you know what it feels like to be happy or sad, or as Steve was saying, the emoticons, we tend to be able to identify our general state. Awareness, being aware, is similar, but we don't tend to acknowledge it, because it's a subtle quality that simply reveals experience. But it becomes really obvious, particularly after a period of really being lost and unaware, even before we've ever meditated. I remember driving a car and just being astounded that I could have been driving for for 10 minutes, and really no idea the image of the roads, how do I make those turns? And then again, we're back present. Being present again is that function of being aware, and we're cultivating this now in a more active way. So really beginning to identify what does it feel like to be aware is an understanding of what awareness is. It's like understanding what sadness is, what anger is, or agitation. Awareness has its own kind of unique, distinctive qualities to it. So rather than going looking for it, because like the mind, it doesn't have any place, there's no shape or color or form to it, it is an endless hunt to go looking for the mind, but we can recognize the activity of being aware. We can know it. Yes, I'm aware, or right now I'm just sort of lost in thinking. And then again, very clear, yes, I'm aware. So that's that understanding that grows about the nature of awareness itself.
You know, we get this question quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I have to show you a three-dimensional teaching. So you have to hold the microphone for me. So in every moment, this is the object, it's being known. Breathing in, being known. Breathing out, it's being known. Pain arises in the knee, being known. But when that happens, we usually go, I don't like that. So there's this filter. It kind of comes over the mind
of aversion. So the mind is still knowing this sensation, but now it's looking through the filter of aversion, and the sensation feels like pain. Okay, when that happens, then the awareness now knows aversion is being known. Aversion is being known. Aversion is being known. But, you know, when we have aversion, or when we feel aversion to something, we want to get rid of that aversion. So where is the "I want to get rid of the aversion" happening? Here's the aversion that's being known. And so when the knowing gets an attitude of mind of, you know, and we look at that aversion with aversion, well, that second aversion is in here. It's in the observing, so to speak. And we can recognize that. Now, there's not another knowing over here. I need three hands. You know? There's one knowing, and there's not another knowing over here. It's more like, oh, this knowing recognizes, oh, there's aversion here. When you check your attitude of mind, that's what you're checking. What's the attitude of mind here? And if you know that, that's wisdom. Even if it's a bad attitude, if you know that, that's wisdom. Call them yours. Yes. I like that. Did you have a question you wanted to ask? No. What was your experience? How was your experience different after our little conversation than it was in the first sitting? Okay, great.
Less trying. I really appreciated you saying about trying.
You.
The second meditation had a lot less of me trying.
Less trying.
And so, again, really reframing that about trying to focus hard, and you know, trying and working to find awareness, allowing awareness to arrive.
Do you think you were aware? Hey, if we can be aware without trying, we're better. Yeah.
I have a question now. The three-dimensional demonstration, I'm a little confused.
Forget it. I had a teacher that used to say, I'm going to give a Dharma talk. Anything that you understand, take it in. Anything you don't understand, don't even think about it. it wasn't meant for you at this time.
Well, I guess because, if you look at the sutta, the mindfulness of mind part of the Chittanu Upasana, you know, there are all these mind states that are listed, right? Lustful mind, angry mind, deluded mind, etc. And so, but you seem to be putting the focus on knowing the awareness, or knowing the mind that knows anger, or knowing the mind that knows lust. And then you said there's the mind that knows aversion triggered by the pain in the knee. And then there's the mind that knows that aversion with aversion. It's kind of like the second dart, the second arrow. Mm-hmm. Isn't that just another object, another kind of aversion that's been triggered by a different object, the original aversion? I don't see the difference between that knowing mind that knows the aversion triggered by this and the knowing mind that knows the aversion triggered by the aversion to the knee.
My distinction is that sometimes the quality of the object conditions a mental state. We can know that. But sometimes the way we are knowing that mental state has also an attitude in there. And when we recognize it, it's wisdom to recognize that. You know, whether it's if you're noticing something, if you're noticing that your emoji as you're practicing is, and you recognize this trying, that's wisdom. Even though you're trying, the recognition of it is wisdom. Right? That's all I'm pointing to, is the understanding that Alexis mentioned at Sayadaw's, trying to get us to understand, what's the mind doing? How is the mind doing this? How is the mind being aware?
Yeah. I mean, is that a different is it not wisdom to recognize that that this pain in my knee has triggered aversion? Is it a different sort of? Is there an advantage to knowing the aversion triggered by aversion versus the aversion triggered by the pain?
No preference. No. But I'm just saying, we're often familiar with the reactive state of mind to an unpleasant, but we rarely recognize the quality of mind with which we're practicing. Yeah, in that sense, you could say, well, that's another object, but it's one that we don't know, because we can strive, as you know, when you have an object to pay attention to, and you're trying to be with it, and you're coming back, and you're yanking your mind back to be with the breath, and you know, you miss this whole effortful, stressing, striving, frustration, it's not working, judgment. You can do that for years. So where's the awareness? It's not including that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So could the same flip side of that would be attaching to a sensation as well, and recognizing the attachment to that as well? You know, the knower is attaching to a good feeling that, or a good sensation that's coming out in your meditation.
Oh yeah, you know, when there's a pleasant feeling in the body. And you're being aware of it, we can notice the pleasantness, we make that an object, but the enjoyment of it, that's another whole recognition of what's going on in the mind that's aware. Oh, there's enjoying in here. And if you don't know that enjoying, that's being attached, isn't it?
A part of me can't figure out, so I listened to a number of your online talks trying to figure this out. So, we're trying to be aware of the mind being aware. What is it? It's being aware of the mind, because it couldn't be the mind, because... Can you expand on that? What is it that's doing the knowing?
Oh, this is an Abhidhamma question. Okay. You know when you go to the club, and I mean the club, the exercise club, you know? Those of us our age, when I say, you know, when you go to the club, we know, you're going to the exercise club. I use this phrase in another retreat where there were young people, and I said, you know when you go to the club and you do this? And they thought it was like a bar. But all of us know, well, when you go to the club, you're going to go do some exercise. Okay, so when you get on the machine and you're pedaling, or you're doing cycling or spinning, or you're doing lifting or weights or whatnot, do you stop and ask what muscle is doing this lifting? Sometimes, I mean, if you're an anatomist, or sometimes you can say, okay, which muscle is doing that? But that's not the point of doing the exercise, is it? The point of the exercise is, oh, do the muscle, develop this muscle. Okay, the point of awareness practice is to develop these muscles of remembering, recognizing, observing, understanding. These are all mental muscles, and they work together. They work together for us to have this experience called awareness. There's a lot of mental muscles that are happening. Remembering is the function of sati. Recognizing is the function of sanya, or perception. Understanding is the function of panya, or wisdom. And we wouldn't even be doing this if there wasn't some aspiration to be aware. This is sadha, faith, confidence. So all of these are in play. You know,
So the actual function that's being served to remember to recognize this experience, that's sati. That's the function of sati. What we usually call mindfulness. You'll have to take my Abhidhamma course.
I can really empathize with what you're saying, because I worked most of my life as a scientist. When I first started meditating, I said, what? The mind is the subject, the mind is the object, and what tool are we using? The mind? This is crazy. But, you know, it still amuses me, but it works. It works, it totally works. So, you know, I am not going to get my poor mind in a twist.
I actually think one reason why this gets complicated a little bit is because we tend to identify with these qualities. You know, in a way we start, in a simple way, to recognize things that, oh, the body does age. It's really not mine. So it becomes easier to recognize sensations. They're changing. The pain comes and goes. So we start on that level. I think over time, there's a growing understanding that, oh, even these functions of mind, like recognizing or being aware of what's happening, doesn't require a sense of self to be doing the awareness. Then we can see, oh, that too is just a function. Sometimes awareness is present, sometimes it's not. There's this intention to keep cultivating awareness, and it then sometimes feels like I am trying to be aware. And then at other times we can recognize, oh, there are these intentions that are cultivating this practice. So even when we say, I am meditating, it's really, this is from Tejaniya, we would say, it's actually, no, it's these faculties of mind are what's meditating. If you look closely, there's intention, there's wisdom, there's some mindfulness, and all the things that are happening. So then it becomes, I find, more accessible what's actually happening, is sometimes awareness is arising. When awareness is arising, it recognizes experience. It knows what's happening. And it can even recognize the fact that awareness is present. So when we're aware, we can recognize, yes, there's awareness. And there's an intention to check, is the mind aware right now? Yes, it's clearly present. What is it knowing? It's remembering that it's seeing, that there's seeing happening. Or hearing, or the hands moving, or whatever experience, wherever we direct the attention. So then, you know, this is really just part of the practice of growing some understanding of what is happening, getting interested in that whole exploration. And in a way, this requires a lot of patience rather than the intellectual mind trying to get in there and figure it out, because the reality is already happening. We don't need to do too much. Just resting, observing, bring in some wise understanding that helps you to just settle again. You know, everything we need to know, it's like a lot of questions, you know, some teachers would just say, keep sitting. You know, so the ultimate answer is just keep sitting, which means just keep observing. We don't need to be sitting, but just keep observing, because that's how we're going to understand the mind and body.
So ultimately, if you take this out into your everyday life, and you can observe your everyday life, and you're not quite so caught up in it.
So you're saying, so ultimately we can take this out into our everyday life?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I would say that was, for me, one of the greatest benefits I was getting from understanding the sustainable way of practicing that isn't creating tension or stress. It's not interfering. It doesn't interfere in our chores and our tasks and ordinary activities. When we really understand how much energy and effort is required for a moment of being aware, and we always only have this moment, how much energy does it take? It's so light. And when you really understand that, I can do this anywhere. Right, so one of the instructions that, again, sorry to say Tejaniya's name so much, but that's my root teacher, so that he gives a lot in the beginning, it was so helpful to me. And if you've sat on retreats with Steve or myself, I've heard this before, but starting off by asking the question, are you aware that you're seeing? Right, so are you aware that you're seeing right now? Anyone aware that they're seeing? And when did you become aware? Yeah. Unless you happen to be attending as soon as I said it, right? So now you're aware that everyone kind of agrees. You may have been attending to that door, but if you weren't attending to that door, simply by hearing a reminder of seeing, oh yeah, and then that suddenly we're aware, oh yeah, I'm seeing. That's happening. We're hearing. We've been hearing our voices and following the meaning, and then just the lightest touch, hearing. So that, which is, you know, it's interesting that sati does have this root meaning of remembering. Not memory, that in that way, but remembering what's happening. So it's not hard to remember what's happening. We simply, what's hard is we forget to remember. But the actual activity of being aware is almost effortless. So yes, that does, as we gain that confidence, and we're not limiting ourselves to associating mindfulness with just sitting still, getting calm with the eyes closed, it should be this quality gets stronger. The muscle of mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger, to the point where we're really seeing a lot of our actions and habits that we would normally gloss over or not want to see because we're very critical about ourselves. We just have the right view as, oh yes, these are just habits. You'd be interested. Yeah, that's really wonderful at that point, because then we don't stop learning ourselves. Instead, we're just meeting ourselves with interest. Yeah, this is a point. It's to live. We want to be living with awareness, living with the Dharma close to us. Yeah, I had gotten to be like a professional meditator of sitting, you know, and I was so good at sitting. And Tejaniya knew that, and he said, "I don't want to hear any reports anymore about your sitting." Yeah. He wouldn't let me report about what happened on the cushion. He only wanted to know, as soon as I started moving, getting up, from that point on, what was my mindfulness like? Mm-hmm. So I had to see, where do I lose mindfulness? Why? When I'm talking, when I see someone familiar, when I go to my room and I'm alone, all those places, I didn't really associate practice with those. In those places, so I might learn to do that.
So I think, oh, probably some of us for sure in this room have done these practices around retreats with them, so there's some familiarity, I think, in a lot of us. And then we go on other retreats and try other practices, but what I'm hearing from you is this is the way. Is that true or not?
Well, I'll give you my version.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times when we go on retreat, there's a very fixed schedule. Mm-hmm. It's silent. You sit, you walk. You're instructed to pay attention to primary object and then secondary objects, and it's very object-oriented. And so the samadhi, or the continuity of awareness that develops, is very conditioned by the silence, slow motion, the nature of the objects that you're paying attention to, the singularity of, you know, at the retreat you only hear Dharma, you only talk Dharma, you don't have any radios, you don't use your phone, you're not supposed to have your phone and, you know, other things, and it's a very rare atmosphere. And so you get a certain kind of experience of mindfulness or awareness, and you think, oh, this is it. But then, you know, the end of the retreat comes, and it's noisy, you're moving fast, you're not sitting, you're not walking with awareness, and there's a multiplicity of things to be aware of, not just the Dharma, but everything. And your samadhi is totally gone. You don't have any recognition of awareness, because the awareness that we're familiar with is dependent on the object, the silence, the slow motion, the structure of the retreat. So what Saito gets us to do, and Alexa was just acknowledging, is like, hey, don't do a formal meditation. Just watch your awareness, you know, so that it doesn't matter what the object is, it doesn't matter what the activity is, it doesn't matter how fast you're going, how slow you're going, it doesn't matter if you're using your cell phone or talking to somebody in person, it doesn't matter. What matters is, you recognize the awareness? And the awareness is totally transportable, whereas the conditions of the retreat are not. You can't take the conditions of a retreat home. You can't take it to work with you. Huh. Okay. But your mind, you can. Your mind goes with you no matter what you're doing, no matter how fast you're going, no matter what activity you're in. if you have the habit of checking your mind, you'll be checking your mind whether you're running, you know, shopping, working, going to the toilet, bathing, having an argument. You can still check your mind, check your mind, check your mind, check your mind. It's totally scalable to all the activities of life.
So I'm
at least that's my
right. I went to Seaside RPG when he was in Seattle, I don't know, sometime last year.
Yeah.
And there was a guy that said, you know, sometimes I don't feel like sitting, or and so I think, well, I'll just be mindful all day. And he said to him, well, how does that work for you? You know, and he said that for a lot of us, we need to have like a time to sit, because it's too easy to get distracted and lose our focus too. So I just thought of that too.
I'm very cautious around, you know, trying to say one style or flavor is better, because first off, we are all conditioned very differently, and we are attracted to different ways of practicing. So all the Dharma ought to be taken in as tools that we're applying, and that this, if there's some flavor that adds something that's rich for you, explore it. I do know, I think one of the things that does happen on retreat is because there's a progression. If retreat is so long, we do kind of, if we follow that the program of starting with the breath and then getting stable, yes, if we were to stay long enough, the mind would have enough momentum that it would kind of merge into this. It's interesting that recently there was, during the teacher training, we broke into groups and presented different flavors of teaching, so Thai forest tradition, Mahasi style, Tejaniya, Pandita. So there were different things, and so I was doing it with a couple other colleagues, teacher trainees. And it's interesting, Justin, after hearing it, he said, oh, I always thought that introducing the attitude and view is something to do later on, but I'm really hearing that. And so why it's so helpful to put it up front. And so it's something, even though that it's often talked about, it's often been, we often wait until the mind has gotten grounded on objects and experiences. And I think this style just says, look, let's bring this wisdom and intelligence up front, having right view and knowing how to check on the attitude, so that that becomes early in the understanding and not something we have to then decondition the emphasis on the object to then also start to understand how am I relating to this? Because the Satipatthana, in both the introduction and all of her frames, talks about these qualities, like the attitude of mind that's free from desires and discontent, or knowing to the extent necessary for bear, or mindfulness to the bear, to, what's the phrase? To the extent, yeah, just the extent necessary for bear knowing, which is like, oh, that's that effortlessness of knowing experience. It's not a deep, penetrating experience, yet the Satipatthana is described as a practice that leads to complete liberation. And we often think that we have to really grab hold very deeply of experiences and objects. So I'd say all of these practices converge together, how you emphasize or what point in your practice you bring in. I think that's the only difference in terms of style. But almost everything that's offered in terms of meditation practices will be found in the Satipatthana, because it's such a complete training. You know? So I just kind of leave it as stylistic, and different teachers like to emphasize different things. And because there is a limit to the number of days, oftentimes if we go on a weekend or 5 days, we keep going through the same process. And it's important to also drop in things that we might not hear unless we're to go on a 1 month retreat or 2 months. And I think with the Tejaniya, he just has confidence that people can hear reflections about the nature of mind and checking on their attitude to bring in right view, that things are just nature. And we can relate to every experience as simply being nature or process. And he's seen that yogis have benefited so much from that, because the tendency is to try and get meditation right, to try and get the experience they want, And unless they hear those reminders, this tendency keeps building.
So you're kind of saying, like, with whatever kind of meditation practice you're doing, to remember that.
Yeah. And then if you're also going to just watch the mind, it's important probably as well at times to really remember the object. What is the mind knowing? So it's not just, and this sort of, maybe what Pitajan was pointing to in that question about, I'm just being mindful all day. Well, are you really? What are you actually knowing? Yes, and then to check both. Is what's being known and does the knowing? Yes, and really being clear in that.
You know, we in the West, in the 21st century, have this great blessing of having all the meditative traditions of the world available and accessible. Mm-hmm. You know, from, it's not just one Buddhist tradition. We've got dozens of different meditative traditions or techniques, and not even just Buddhist, but all kinds of religions and spiritual practices. So we have this overabundance, really. And so naturally we kind of graze at the smorgasbord of spiritual delights. You know, we try a little this, we try a little breath work at the nostrils, we try a little noting, we try a little relaxing, we try a little recognize the mind, we try a little and it's good to have sampled all of them, or several of them. But it seems to be that each teacher kind of gets their particular shtick. You know, Saito Pandita certainly got his, Hasi Saito certainly got his, Ajahn Chah had his, Utejaniya's got his. You know, we're lucky in that we can hear all of them. But we're going to find that whatever we put most effort in, or whatever, we may have preferences among it. So I think what Alexis is saying is, okay, if you learn, you know, to observe awareness, that's good, but don't forget the object. And if you're practicing with Dupandita, it's all objects. Object, 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 object. I have to say, yeah, I didn't know, Sai Dupandita just passed away a few weeks ago, so he was 94. And he's a great teacher, and he had profound influence on how Vipassana is practiced in the West. I mean, just unbelievable influence. So, you know, we all of our practices have been affected by the way you talk. So, just want to be respectful of the fact. But, you know, I think the understanding that I've come to now, having practiced in two major traditions and a couple of other that I've dabbled in, is that all teachers have an initial teaching. And if you only hear the initial teaching, you're going to have a limited view of what they actually teach. So someone hears Upandita or Mahasi Sayadaw teaching, their initial instruction is going to get a certain view of, oh, this is how you practice. Or if you hear Utejaniya, you have a certain idea of this is how you practice. But my experience, having been involved in two very well, and another third tradition of practice for some time, see that, I don't want to say that they all converge, but they all expand into each other. So that what might look like this technique is over here and that technique is over there on day one, that's true. But on, you know, week 10, they're overlapping a lot. So I think it's just good to remember that initial instruction is not a full product from any teacher or any tradition. Should we knock off? If you want more, we'll have to come back tomorrow. We'll have lots of opportunity to practice, to discuss practice, to questions, and just similar to tonight. We may end up giving a Dharma talk, but a lot of it's going to be practice oriented, so you can really clarify your own understanding of how to practice and why, and use your own experience. So it's very experiential. If that's of interest to you, That's what's of interest to us. Okay. So, thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate your interest in the Dharma. It's something that we are very committed to.